Okay, you're listening to CKUT Radio. I'm Joe Broadhurst, and I'm pleased to be joined on the phone with Keith Finsterwald. How are you doing this afternoon?
Fine, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. You have an interesting story to tell, and I read about it in, several different newspapers, but can you just give us an idea of what actually happened? You saved somebody's life, and your life ended up being saved as well. Can you give us a little bit of background on this story and tell us what happened?
Well, at the time, I was camping out at the shore of the Fraser River, and I think everybody's heard of my story already. You know, I was homeless at the time, so you know I was in a tent, and what happened is on the night of January 2nd. I was sleeping, and I was woken up by a tremendous crunching sound. And for the time that it took me to stick my head out of my tent and look in the direction of the sound, from the other direction, I heard an equally loud splash. And so I poked my head up over a rock wall that I built up, and there was these two taillights sticking out of the water, about 50 feet into the river. I'm just waking up. I don't know, you know, what the heck, you know, I'm looking at, you know, because, you know, I have pretty bad eyesight, right? And, you know, I think maybe somebody's playing a joke. What, is it a boat? What is that, you know? And it only took me a couple of seconds to realize it was actually a truck, the tail end of a truck sticking out of the water. And so I run down to the riverbank, and I start yelling, you know, in the direction of the vehicle there, like, you know, hello, hello, is anybody in there? And that's when I hear a very, like, a faint, like, yell for help from inside the cab of the vehicle. It was a female voice, and she's crying, help, help me. And in that instant that she yelled that, that's when the vehicle totally submerged. It totally sank, like, out of sight. And me, I'm standing there, I'm kind of panicking, like, I'm in shock, I don't know what, you know, you know what to do, or what, you know, because you know I can't really swim very well anymore, right? I'd gotten an accident myself a couple of years ago, and I have nerve damage, right? But luckily at that time, that's when the police officer Proctor he ran up over the embankment, and he's yelling police, police, and you know the first thing he sees is like you know a crazy guy you know standing by the water there, you know, waving his arms and yelling, there's people in the vehicle, and he's like looking, what vehicle? it's gone, right? And it was about maybe half a minute later that the girl, amazingly enough, she got out of the cab and she swam to the surface. And when she broke the surface of the water, she starts screaming like loudly, and she's screaming loudly, you know, help, help me, and you know, and she's being swept away, you know, down the river. Well, the officer, he immediately, you know, runs down, and he's, you know, frantically taking off his gun belt and his utility, you know, and his, you know, his jackets and stuff like that, right? But he gets to his boots, and he's having trouble. He's like, his boots are stuck. He can't get his boot off. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I sure as hell can't swim in a pair of boots, right? And so I'm standing by the officer, and I'm looking, you know, in the direction of the girl, and at the time, she's being swept further and further down the river, right? And, you know, I'm standing there, and I'm yelling. I mean, I'm hearing this girl that had just gotten in a car wreck and being swept down the river crying for help. I mean, what am I supposed to do? I mean, I have to try to do something, right? And, you know, so I take my jacket off and kick my shoes off, and I dive into the water. Well, I'll tell you, that water was cold.
It must have been freezing.
Oh, it was, yeah. It was like almost instant hypothermia once, you know, you get into the water, like sub-zero, right? And, I get about 20 yards out, and I don't know if you know anything about like nerve damage or whatever, but, like, you know, that kind of temperature, you know, shock difference, like, oh, all of a sudden my whole side and my arm went numb. And, you know, I almost drowned myself. I had to, like, struggle to get back up to the embankment, right? But, you know, thank God the officer, you know, he'd gotten his, you know, his stuff off, and he swam past me, and you know, I'm like, you know, kind of like yelling at him the direction that, you know, for him to swim in, right? But, you know, I mean, what can I do? I had to, you know, that was it. You know, I couldn't do it, you know. So in reality, you know, it wasn't me who saved the girl. It was the officer, you know.
Well, let's not downplay it, because you were there and you did your best. So let's not downplay that. Now, the policeman, he left his gun and all of his paraphernalia on the side of the embankment, and you watched over that. Is that correct?
Only for a second or two, but after he couldn't get all of his stuff off right, so I jumped in the water ahead of him, and so. When I got back up to the embankment after, you know, my side, you know, went dead, he swam past me. But it took me, you know, a few minutes to get back to the spot where he took off his equipment. And so by the time I got there, it was only like maybe half a minute later that his partner runs up over the hill too. And he comes down and I tell him what's happening and the situation. And then he sends me back up to the top of the hill to the road there, to let, you know, whatever rescuer or police up on the top there, you know what's happening, you know, where they are and what's going on, right?
And so the rescue team showed up a bit later.
Yeah, it wasn't very long after that.
And so let's talk about how your life has changed after this. It turns out that somebody stepped in and heard your story and was able to help you out. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, there's a lady, her name's Penny March. She's the founder of the Forgotten Felines organization out here. And, you know, that's an organization that helps, like, you know, abandoned and homeless, you know, and cats and stuff. And, well, I guess she heard that, you know, she heard your story, and she immediately grabs a friend of hers and they drive down to the riverside there, and, you know, with a bag of clothes and food and, you know, just like, you know, a tremendous, like, you know, generosity, you know, they just came in and, you know, you gotta know, I mean, I look pretty rough at the time, you know, I like Grizzly Adam type, you know, type appearance. Right. But she, you know, just, you know, such a, you know, a beautifully like, generous lady. Right. She comes down there, and she, you know, and I'm talking to her, and it was about 10 minutes after I meet her that she's already got my whole emergence back into society planned out. You know what I mean? She had my whole future just planned out. You know how to get me back on track type thing. And see, because she has a friend, her name is Petra Smith, who her and her daughter run a horse farm that takes in abused and mistreated horses.
And that's called Brighter Days
Horse
Rescue?
The Brighter Days Horse Ranch.
Okay.
And so she, like when I told her my story, you know, that when I started in the circus, I started as an animal groom and a prop guy. And so I had some experience with horses and things like that, right? And so she just, you know, made the connection and just was like, you know, had her friend, you know, her and her friend, you know, talked it over, and, you know, it was maybe not even a week later, you know, they come in their vehicle along with one of the TV stations, you know, to pick me up, and that was it, you know.
And so now you're living on the farm, is that correct?
Yes, yes. Corporation, I'm pretty embarrassed to say, but I forget, but they donated a mobile home to me.
Wow.
You know? So, I mean, things have just been, there's been a pretty dramatic change in my life. You know, although I'm kind of used to dramatic changes in my life, though, you know, every major change in my life has been made with, like, a sledgehammer, you know?
Well, let's talk a bit about how you ended up by the river in a tent. What happened in your life, and why did you end up living in a tent by the river?
Well, see, I was 14 years ago, maybe a little over 14 years ago, when I was hadn't turned 18 yet, a circus came through my town. It was a little town called Vernon in the Okanagan Valley. And see, at that time of my life, I was kind of on that verge of, like, you know, either going in one direction, like, you know, getting into trouble, you know, going with the wrong crowd, or going in the other direction, you know. And so I chose neither, and I went, and, you know, I decided to hop aboard the circus, and you know, that started my life out in the circus. And well, I traveled with the circus across Canada, and then they went into the United States, and at the end of their season, they ended up in Southern California. And during this time, I'd become friends with the trapeze troupe that was working on the show at the time. And the leader of the troupe, his name was Miguel Caceres. He saw somebody, you know, something in me that I didn't see in myself, right? He thought I'd be able to become a trapeze artist. And, you know, he asked if I would like to come to Florida and learn to do trapeze with him and his family. And I was like, sure. So, you know, 5 months later, 5 or 6 months later, after, you know, the most grueling, intensive, you know, blood, sweat, and tears time in my life, you know, I trained in Florida. And 6 months later, I do my first show in front of 20,000 people in Nashville, Tennessee, in their, I don't know, it was the Astrodome or something.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty a pretty big change from, like, you know, kind of a small town, you know, street kid to, you know, performing in front of 20,000 people in tights, you know.
Yeah.
It's a pretty big, you know, change there. Well, I traveled with them, you know, and I did circus for probably about 9 years with them. And once we got to we got in a contract to go to Las Vegas. We did a circus in Las Vegas, and at the end of our contract there, I'd become enamored with a girl who worked in Vegas, and I got married, and I kind of wanted to, you know, try something new. I wanted to kind of go off and you know, try some different things, right? And so me and my wife, we opened our own club in Las Vegas. It was called Chaos Cafe, and that ran that ran for about a year. Well, technically around for a year. We were open a little longer than that, you know. but we ended up getting kind of screwed over by the landlord. It ended up that he was renting to us illegally. That he didn't have the right to lease the place to us. That the money we were paying rent to him was just going in his pocket. It wasn't going to the real owner.
So he was swindling you.
Yeah, pretty much. So the business we built up there over that year, like within the first 3 months, we were considered, you know, the best new band venue in the West Coast, and we were getting, you know, calls from bands like from all over the States and Canada and Europe, and we had to close down, and we lost pretty much everything in that, right? So we decided to make a new start and move up to Seattle, because we'd gotten the offer to open another Chaos Cafe up in Seattle. We had an investor line up and everything. He was he did licensing, bar and restaurant licensing, and he was really attached to the idea of of our decor and, you know, just the way we ran the place. And, you know, he wanted to open a business with us. So we were like, yeah, you know, I mean, it was a great opportunity. We packed all of our stuff and went up to Seattle. And, well, 3 days after we got to Seattle, we got a call from him. His name is Mike. I won't say his last name, but he tells us he just became involved in a divorce suit, and all of his assets got frozen. So there we were in Seattle. We had a place lined up, and, you know, we rented a house a bunch of months ahead of time, and, you know, we were just all ready to, like, you know, start a business right up in Seattle. And there we were stuck. No money, no way to, you know, no way to do it or anything.
And so the sledgehammer came down again, right?
Again, yeah. So there we were, and, I'm pretty adaptable, right? And, you know, not only do I do circus performing, but I also did, like, private shows and stuff. I did, you know, fire breathing and fire performing and single trapeze acts and, you know, all sorts of stuff, right? So we could get by, right? It was about a year after I got in Seattle. That was when the car accident happened. It was on a bridge. It was a sudden ice storm. Because of the sudden ice storm, I didn't have, like, new tires. I just had one of those little Mitsubishi sports coupes. And, you know, I came to almost a complete stop. I was, you know, when I got to this bridge. Well, there was this girl behind me who was in a 78 Monte Carlo. You know, the type of car that's like 3 tons with, like, the grill, the huge, like, arrow shaped grill.
Right. You can put 20 people in it and have
a party. Exactly. Yeah. They'll drive through a semi truck. You know?
Right.
And, well, yeah, she hit me from behind, going 60 miles per hour.
Wow.
And the force was so great that the steering wheel tore halfway off the column in my grip, in my hand, right? And the seatbelt that I had on, there was such a force on the seatbelt that it crushed the suprascapular nerve cluster in my shoulder, which is one of the major nerve clusters that send the signals to your left half of your upper body and back.
Wow.
And that was it, man. You know, about 10 months of like very hard physical therapy, and that was it. I couldn't do it, you know. There went my career.
There went your career, and did your marriage soon dissolve after that?
It did. You know, my wife, you know, she was awesome. I look back now, and I kick myself for the way I treated her during that time, you know. But, you know, I was going through, like, a depression and stuff, you know. And, no, I was in no way abusive or something, or anything like that, but, you know, I was just indifferent, you know what I mean?
Well, you
I just didn't care about anything, right?
You didn't know where you were going. And
yeah, you know, I just, you know, my whole life was wrecked, you know. And, well, she stuck with me through the physical therapy and stuff, and, you know, but when they told me at the end, and the time that I got my insurance settlement, I, you know, after paying the lawyer, I only got $33,000. $33,000 for the rest of my life? Wait, for not in trapeze anymore? See, the girl, she didn't have insurance, The only reason I got that money is because I had uninsured motorist coverage. Well, that didn't even cover my freaking medical expenses, you know?
So you went back up to Canada?
Yeah, after that, I decided, you know, maybe I should, try my hand, you know, in the movie industry in Vancouver, right? Because, you know, I'd heard that, you know, there's a pretty big movie industry up here. And, you know, because of my background, I'm sufficiently capable of, like, coordinating stunts and maybe doing, easier stunts and stuff like that myself, right? Well, that didn't happen. And it's one thing led to another, and I'm ending up having to sell my stuff off. And I'm trying, I tried some of the menial jobs, right? But the repetitive, I can't do a lot of repetitive lifting and stuff like that, you know? I mean, anything like, over, 30 or 40 pounds, going over my head, it just, brings tears to my eyes, right? And
so eventually you just ended up by the river.
I just, I was at the last bit of my money, and I had my cat. And with the last bit of my money, I was like, man, there's no way my cat's going to be freaking homeless, right? So I sent my cat to my ex-wife, right? You know, packed my stuff up, put it in a corner, took a bag with me, and I left, and I just took off. You know, I was like, there's nothing else for me to lose, you know?
And
once I got to that point, I'm like, there's no further I can fall, you know? So that's where I was at, and I just walked off and walked toward the river.
What were you doing to survive as far as eating and doing something?
You know what, man? You adapt, You learn which stories throw out which things, and you just learn the ropes, you know? If you don't adapt, you die, right? Now, because I wasn't eligible for any social assistance because I was a returning resident to Canada, and I didn't have any taxation passed or anything like that. You know, my whole adult life has been in the States and stuff, right? So, there I was, and I was just, I decided to just crawl under a rock and pull it in after me and just kind of, hide away for a while, you know?
How do you feel about actual homelessness as it is in society? It's very strange to go from being a trapeze artist in front of 20,000 people to going to living by, homeless by a river.
Man, I had a nice house in Las Vegas. I had a nice house and two cars and a wife. I had everything,
And I just don't think people understand that how easy it is that you can, one or two things can happen, and all of a sudden, a normal person who is performing in front of 20,000 people can end up in that situation.
Man, I've thought about that a lot. Trust me, there's very little else I can, you can do when you're, when you're in a tent by a river, right? And I don't know, man. It's all cause and effect, I think, I mean, one little thing leads to another, and it causes a larger rock to fall, which causes a larger rock to fall, right? And, there's just nothing, especially, anyway, my situation, I mean, the way I feel, I don't know if it's correct or not, but, I mean, it's just the way I feel. Like, every, really bad thing that's happened has been circumstances beyond my control, you know? Yeah, like sometimes there's things that people do in life that, you know, they cause themselves, you know? But I mean, it really, you know, I spent a lot of time on self-pity and self-analyzing myself, right? But, you know, I mean, what really can you, what can you say? You know, I mean, shit happens, right? Sorry, I don't know if you can use that on the radio, but...
Oh, that's fine.
But yeah, it's, you know, you can't do anything about it. I mean, if you can't do anything about it, you can't, you're not going to gain anything by dwelling on it. So you just got to go on. You just got to, you know, you got to survive. You know, that's where it comes down to, you know. Once you lose everything, the only thing you have left to lose is your life, right? You know, once you're not afraid of that anymore, you're not afraid of anything, right? And I learned that very early in the circus, too.
Well, I'm glad that you're able to have a roof over your head stay warm, especially during these winter months. And are you gonna stay on the farm and work there for a while?
I plan to, and I hope so. But like I said, man, I mean, I get hit by a sledgehammer times in my life, right? So I don't know, you know, what's gonna happen, you know, day to day. And but, you know, where I'm at now, I really like it, and I hope I can stay there, and I just feel tremendous gratitude to the people that have been helping me. And see, it's just, for example, you know, a lady's just coming up now, a perfect stranger I've never met, and is giving me stuff, you know? I mean, how do you come to terms with that now, you know?
It must be difficult, because when you're sitting by the river in a tent and nobody's coming up and giving you anything, it must be difficult.
You know,
so...
I have no words for it. It's like I spend all the time of my life being self-sufficient, and it's really hard to accept help, right? But there's sometimes in your life that, I mean, you know, you got to consider yourself, you know, a moron if you don't, you know, accept help, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, and, you know, that was kind of driven in my head by Penny, too, you know, when she was talking to me, and I'm like, you know, hemming and hawing, like, you know. Because, you know, I've always liked to do things on my own, and I've always liked to be self-sufficient, you know?
Right.
You know, since I was very young, you know, I've always had to work, and I've always taken care of myself, right? And
right.
That's been a really hard thing for me, you know, is kind of like coming to terms with that, you know?
And there are many people in that situation.
There's so many people, man. And all those people you see on the street, so, you know, every single one of them has a story, you know. Every single one of them has a past, you know. They weren't born homeless, you know.
And there's a lot of people that some maybe will look at them and say, "Well, he's gone.
He's an alcoholic, you know." And I can't say. I mean, there is actually a good portion of those people that are, right. Well, there's a reason for it. I myself never had trouble with drugs or alcohol. You know, I mean, except when I was on morphine for the pain in my shoulder, right. You know, I took myself off that, you know, because that wasn't, you know, my thing. But, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, that's the only way they face reality is through drugs and alcohol, right? And, you know, for people just to, like, you know, kind of turn their heads away or walk across to the other side of the street, which I was one of them at one time in my life, you know. You know, I didn't think, you know, oh, this person has a past, you know.
If you could talk to people and tell them, to explain to them, say, how they should look at homeless people, what would you say?
That we're not, but you know, we're not born homeless. You know, it's not all that we are. You know, we're people with a past. You know, we have a story. There's a reason for behind everything, right? And whether that reason's, you know, self-inflicted or inflicted upon them, you know, you can't always, you know, control your circumstances, right? And, you know, sometimes, you know, people just need a little bit of push in the right direction, right? And, you know, I hope in a way that draws people attention to, you know, to the situation. I mean, at least, I don't know about out there, but here in Vancouver, like, homelessness is a very large problem, you know? There's a very large percentage of people that are homeless right now.
And I think it becomes a larger problem every day.
Every day.
I've been speaking with Keith Finsterwalt, and I thank you for joining me this afternoon, and good luck with everything in the future.
Okay.
And I just hope that you stay on a path that makes you happy and that keeps you safe.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much.